Morning, everyone, and welcome to session three of the series Your Worth, Nurturing Our Intrinsic Value. And today we're going to be talking about working on our strengths and weaknesses. So just to summarize, we're working on a process, discovering our, and accessing, tapping into our self-worth in the context of a healthy self-perception and a healthy self-esteem. Now, of course, when we're talking about building a healthy self-esteem, we're not talking about something that you kind of go to the 7-Eleven and buy a product, right? It's something that's a process. It's a lifelong process, actually, and it has so many multi-layers and so many different components, because it includes so many different things, like the way we perceive the world, the way we perceive ourselves, our own mindset, becoming more and more comfortable with ourselves. We'll talk about it more today. It involves working on our strengths and our weaknesses. So it's a very complex process, and it takes a long time, and it takes a lifetime maybe, and it gets better and better. But what we can do is, we can at least shift our mindset, we can shift our attitude. And what we're trying to achieve in the beginning is at least to start thinking a little bit differently about the definition of ourselves, about identity, about how we see the outside and we see ourselves. It's a complicated topic, and hopefully it'll become clearer as we keep going. Just before we start today, I want to just mention, on the other side of your handout, you'll see a list of books. Most of you will be familiar that since we moved into this building, we actually set up a proper lending library, which is open on a Tuesday morning, Thursday morning, Sunday morning, and other times if someone else in the office can help you. I put a list of books that we have currently that are connected to the topic somewhat, connected to self-esteem, connected to the topic that we're going through. And if people want to become, if you aren't already, if you want to become a member of the library, it's open after the session on Thursdays. And you want to take us some of these books, that will be fantastic. In addition, I did a little deal with Goldschmidt Bookstore. Last time I recommended a book, he sold quite a few copies, and I told him he really needs to give Bin a commission. So... So he took me seriously. No. So there's two books which contain a lot of the concepts that we're going through, both by Rabbi Dr. Twersky. One of them is called Angels Don't Leave Footprints, and the other one is called 10 Steps to Being Your Best. So he didn't have many in stock, not here or in Melbourne, but I got whatever he has, and we have it in the office. So if anyone wants to purchase those books, you can see Michal afterwards, and... we're selling it at his price, and he'll give us a little bit of a donation to Binah for it. So that works well. So either to borrow the books, or we have some of them for sale in the office. Okay. Now, last week we began with the first step to acquiring the skill or the first strategy to actually building up a mindset that builds up our own self-perception and self-esteem. And that was that we need to learn to acknowledge that dependency on approval from other people is an unhealthy thing, right? So we talked about how we define ourselves. And we talked about the problem that many of us define ourselves by the perception of the way others look at us, right? And that becomes very, very unhealthy, because we keep on doing things and we keep on driving ourselves crazy to perform and to behave in a way where it meets the approval of other people. And that becomes our whole definition of ourselves, the whole identity, outside in rather than inside out. Right? Now, of course, as we said last week, a little bit of that is fine, and in fact we should behave in a way that's pleasing for other people. It's a value as well. We should not only do the right thing, but we should be seen to do the right thing, and that's all true. And a little bit of fear of being approved by others or being rejected by others is probably healthy. But really what we were talking about last week is more the mindset, the constant mindset, that we have that constant mindset of what do people think about us and about how we are performing. And the frequency of it. I think it's got to do also with mindset and frequency. So yes, we all do it once in a while, but, and that's a healthy human being. A normal human being will always worry to some level what other people are thinking, but it's about the constant mindset and the frequency of how often we do it. And as we said last week, when it becomes intense that way, it lands up in all sorts of negative type of patterns, like we do things for other people, but it's out of weakness, not out of strength. We find it hard to balance the different directions that we get pulled in. We don't have a sense of self. We haven't established where we are, so that then we can balance the different callings of life. And we devalue our own identity more and more as the process goes along. So the first step, therefore, is to sort of develop a mindset where my identity is not dependent on what other people think. My identity is dependent on who I am. Now, today I want to develop that a little bit further. And I want to share with you something which I think goes to the very, very heart of what it means to have a healthy self-perception, what it means to have a healthy self-esteem. And what will come out of that is a whole process where we learn to deal, using this idea that we're going to talk about today, where we use this concept to work on our strengths, to develop our strengths, and also take responsibility for our failings, for our mistakes, and for our weaknesses, which we all have. We all have strengths, we all have weaknesses, but when we have a healthy self-perception, we actually learn how to deal with them in a proper way. And the concept, bear with me because it's a bit of a journey, but the concept begins with an extension of what we did last week. See, last week we talked about the unhealthy dependency of what others think of us, right? The problem is that just as we cannot define ourselves by what other people perceive as success, right? And we talked about this last week, where success becomes defined by what other people think is successful and by comparison. And that's a terrible thing, and we need to learn to get out of that. We also need to understand that we cannot define ourselves by our own successes and our own failures. And that's a whole nother level. In other words, not only is approval seeking from other people dangerous, but sometimes we fall into the trap of needing self-approval the whole time in an unhealthy way. And that becomes very, very problematic. And what we'll discover is that the same problem, the same cause of why we look for approval to other people actually then develops in why we look for approval from ourselves the whole time, and we beat ourselves up unnecessarily because we need to learn what the real definition of ourselves is and not define ourselves by the things that we achieve or the things that we fail to achieve. Now let's understand what that means. By now, in this session, we know that critical to human function is growth, right? So growth means that we aren't satisfied of where we are, and growth means that we do grow, and we do nurture our strengths, and we do take responsibilities for our weaknesses, and we know that as a human being, the worst thing that we can do to ourselves is complacency and apathy and be comfortable where we are, right? We've talked about this millions of times, that growing as a human being means to go beyond our comfort zone, to go beyond where we are, to go beyond what we're used to doing, and that's relative to each week and each month and each year, and we need to take those strengths that we have and improve on them. And we need to take responsibility. We need to recognize that we have weaknesses and take responsibility for them and fix them and improve on them, right? But when is that actually possible, right? So I just want to make it clear. We're not talking about, and this is where the abuse of the terminology that we talked about the first week comes in. Self-esteem does not mean that you're okay with yourself. Meaning, I'm okay the way we are. I'm never going to grow. This is me. Take it or leave it, right? That's the modern distorted interpretation of self-esteem. That goes to the very, very antithesis of what it means to be a human being, right? Self-esteem doesn't mean that I'm not going to change because I'm fine with me. That's not self-esteem. That's laziness, apathy, complacency, right? So a true human being does grow. A true human being is uncomfortable where we are. A true human being goes beyond. A true human being takes the next step. But when are we able to take the next step? And here where it's almost paradoxical. When are we able, and we'll see how this develops, when are we able to take the next step? When are we able to nurture our strengths properly? When are we able to acknowledge our weaknesses properly and work on them and improve on them? It's only when we don't define ourselves by those strengths and weaknesses. And you'll see how this plays out in a minute. Is that clear? We'll see that when we define ourselves by our own strengths and weaknesses, then we become paralyzed. And we're not able actually to use them, to improve on them, or take responsibility for them. It's specifically the person that doesn't define themselves by their strengths and their weaknesses, and their own successes and failures. That's the person who will be able to actually nurture them, take responsibility for them, and grow properly as a human being. Because the foundation of a healthy self-perception, number one, is to become comfortable with who we are at the very, very basic and intrinsic level. Right? In other words, it doesn't mean that we're not going to grow, we're not going to use our strengths and weaknesses, but we also have to be comfortable and accept ourselves at the very, very core foundation of who we are. Our very essence. In other words, we accept ourselves because we are who we are at the very essence of how we were created. Every human being was created by the divine imprint in the image of God, as we said the first time. And at that very core, intrinsic, essential foundation of who we are that we need to learn to become comfortable with, secure with, and accept. I think I've told you the story a number of years ago that Rabbi Dr. Twersky tells about himself. As I told you, he writes extensively on the topic of self-esteem. And part of it has to do with his own journey. He was a very successful rabbi, a Torah scholar, and then shifted to become a psychiatrist and was a very successful doctor and a rabbi together. And he was building up a practice. He built a rehabilitation center for alcoholics in Pittsburgh, I think. And then he realized later on in his life that with all of that success, he has a very, very weak self-perception of himself, something that he really needs to build on. And he tells the story that one of the triggers, one of the signs that he had that he doesn't really accept himself, he's not really comfortable with himself, is a story that happened to himself, which went like this, that he was instructed by a doctor that he needs to relax. So he was told that he needs to travel to some sort of resort area where there's some relaxation spas or baths or whatever the case is. And they'll teach him relaxation techniques and be able to take a real break. So he traveled there and he got into this bath and there was rules of how you do it. The rule was you get in and you have to relax. Relax means you can't read, you can't talk on a mobile phone, you can't do anything else, but you also can't sleep. In other words, you have to do nothing, essentially. You've got to just relax for 20 minutes. So he thinks to himself, this is paradise. Gan Eden. Like, such a busy guy. Always bothered by appointments, by calls, by questions, by queries. What can be better than to get in and for 20 minutes, it's not a long time, 20 minutes, right? But 20 minutes just to do nothing. And of course, indeed, for the first 60 seconds, 120 seconds, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, it was indeed beautiful. And after 5 minutes, he was going absolutely crazy. And he says that it was then that he realized that he's actually not that comfortable being in the company of himself. He's not that comfortable with himself. He realized that he had escaped his entire life. He lives escaping into the things that he achieves. Into his areas of strength, into his competencies, into his talents. And he hasn't ever really taken the time to get to know himself. No one said you can't sit in the bath and think. You could think. But that means you have to think by yourself, with yourself, about yourself. So it was that moment that he realized that when he's not doing anything, that he's not comfortable. He was a famous guy by then, a talented guy, but not totally comfortable with himself. You see, self-esteem means going to understanding and going to the very core of who we are. And as we'll see, the very core of who we are is beneath, deeper than, comes before how we think, how we feel, how we accomplish, how we operate, and how we behave. let's understand this concept. And this is a concept that I have shared with you before, but I think it's been a number of years, and those that have good memories, this is revision time. But a very, very important concept nonetheless. The teachings of Kabbalah teach us the following idea. That our soul is divided into five layers. Think of it like, I like to think of it like circles, right? Where at the middle of the circle you have the core essence of who we are, and then we start to spread out how we behave and how we operate. The way it works is as follows, that in fact these five layers have names, based on a midrash, where the midrash says that the soul has got five names. First name is the most outer layer of our soul is called nefesh. And nefesh refers to how we behave, operational, functional, how we think, how we speak, how we behave, what we do, action. Right. Closer to who we are, a more inner circle, is the layer of ruach, which is the layer of emotion. What we feel, every human being has emotions. No one can really operate properly without feelings, responding to happiness, to sadness, to pain, to enjoyment, to pleasure, all of the range of emotions that we have, which we know all are subdivided into seven emotions, as we've talked about many times. And that's the layer of emotion, that's where our emotions live, at that layer. The third is, getting closer into who we really are, is the neshama. Now neshama is a generic name for the whole thing, but it's also a specific level. And the neshama is the layer of cognition, it's how we think. Getting even closer into who we really are. In other words, cognition is intellect, intellectualized, chokhmah, binah, and das, ideas that we develop, things that we think through. The uniqueness of the human being, the ability to think and then to make choices, make decisions, etc. Closer in is the layer called chaya. Chaya is the layer of the subconscious, right? The layer of the metaphysical, where we sort of go into a new reality where we tapping into things which are less concrete. Less conscious. So we all have a subconscious. In fact, our subconscious is very active. We just don't know that. Many things begin in the conscious and then go into the subconscious. Memory has a lot to do with subconscious. Often when we forget things, we don't really forget things. We actually just store them away in the filing cabinet of the subconscious. And sometimes they come out, sometimes they don't come out. Whatever the case is, but it's the subconscious. And then there's a fifth layer. And the fifth layer is a whole different category. The fifth layer is called Yechida, which is the core essence of who we are. It's us. It's not our subconscious. Yechida. It's not our subconscious. It's not our cognitive abilities. It's not our emotions. It's not our behavior. So what is it? It's us. It's who we are. It's our core identity. It's what we call the divine spark. When we say that a person was created in the divine image, divine energy, it's that spark of divinity which God blew into the nostrils of Adam when he first gave him into a soul, at the very, very essence of that soul. That's what it is. It's that spark. It's that spark of purity. It's absolutely pure and pristine. It's that essential life energy that is at the very core and foundation of everyone's soul. Okay? That's the five. Clear? Now, what we need to understand is that these five layers divide into two. There's a huge difference. I mean, there's different ways of dividing them, but for this discussion, they divide into two. There's a huge difference between the first four, meaning the outer, the inner, more inner, more inner, and the very core. And there's two fundamental differences. The two fundamental differences are tied in with each other. The first difference is that the first four layers are corruptible. They can become hurt, they can become damaged. Right? Now we understand that. First of all, we can behave inappropriately, we can do the wrong thing, we can say the wrong thing, that's on a behavior level. We all know that. There's the right ways of behaving, there's wrong ways of behaving, and we can do both. And when we behave inappropriately, what actually happens is we damage the part of our soul where behavior lives. So therefore, that's the outer layers. Therefore, the outer layer of our soul actually becomes damaged. It's fixable, and that's, of course, One of the fundamental concepts in Judaism is the idea of tshuva, which is repentance, return, reconnection. So it's fixable, but nevertheless it can become damaged, it can become corrupted, it can become weakened. Of course, emotions for sure. We all know that we can respond inappropriately and negatively with negative emotions. So we can become angry, we can hate, we can be aggressive inappropriately, we can be intolerant when it's not appropriate. And when, of course, we do respond, emotions are all about responses, right? Emotions are how we feel about the situation around us, and emotions are how we respond to something that's happened to us. And therefore, when we respond appropriately, we strengthen the layer of emotions. When we respond inappropriately, we weaken that layer, we damage that layer where emotions live. Same thing with neshama, the same thing with our cognition. A person who's pure, a person who wants to follow the correct and appropriate moral path, will align his or her thinking with that path. And very often we know that people can think and we can come up with real intellectual arguments which are morally damaged, right? Which are distorted. We only need to go to the Holocaust where we had people who were very, very, very intelligent people who came up with these theories that were destructive. But they were all intellectual, right? Now, of course, that's extreme, but we all do that on some level. Where we, you know, the Talmud has I think I've mentioned this before, the Talmud has a very beautiful expression. The Talmud says that with intellect you can do anything. And there's a whole discussion in the Talmud about laws of purity and impurity, which are not that relevant today in terms of, because we don't have a temple, etc. But it talks about the sources of impurity, and one of the sources of impurity is what we call a sheretz, a dead rodent. And if someone comes in contact, they're actually impure, in order to go to the temple, they have to go to a mikveh, etc. So the Talmud, when it talks about intellectual bias and how distorted a person's thinking can actually be, the Talmud says, a famous expression, that there can be someone who can purify a rodent with 150 reasons. In other words, which is absurd, because that's the source of impurity. So therefore, but it's possible, even though it's the source of impurity, for someone to come up with 150 very good reasons why the source of impurity is actually pure. Right? Absurdity, but that's what people do. So in other words, the layer of cognition can be damaged, it can be corrupted. And the fascinating thing now is that we even know that the layer of subconscious can be damaged. Very, very directly. We know the effect of subliminal advertising, for example, right? Where your conscious mind is actually not working, but your subconscious is, and it can be influenced. It can be influenced positively, and therefore it can be influenced negatively. Or it can be damaged by things traveling from the conscious to the subconscious. For example, if someone has a negative emotion or a negative memory, and it's not dealt with, it's not resolved, and then the memory leaves the conscious and goes to the subconscious, subconscious is damaged, the subconscious is weakened. Okay? So, we all have challenges on every one of those levels. We all have emotions that are positive, emotions that can potentially be negative, we need to deal with it. We all have inclinations to behave rightly or behave wrongly. We all have different ways of thinking. We all have subconscious issues. We've all got positive and negative, good and bad on each one of those four levels. But that's where the fifth level is different. The fifth level, which is the core essence of the human being, can never be destructive. It can never be destroyed. It can never be damaged. There remains, sometimes it's very, very buried, very deeply, but nevertheless, there remains within every single person that spark of divinity, that spark of goodness, that is absolutely pure, that is there equally in every single person and can never be distorted, and can never be damaged, and can never be corrupted. That's the first difference. The second difference is this, and that's where it ties the two things together. Second difference is that in some writings of Kabbalah, they refer to the four outer layers of the soul as, in Hebrew it's called levushim, which is garments. Now that's a very, very critical analogy, a very critical metaphor. What's the meaning of a garment? A piece of clothing, a garment that someone puts on, has a number of different layers to it. It has a tremendous impact on the person. People even think differently or act differently depending on what they're wearing. It enhances the appearance, it enhances the beauty, external, internal, whatever the case is. But, so the power of garments are very, very strong. But it's not the person. My clothing is not me. It's not who I am. It might affect me, but it's not who I am, number one. And number two, because it's not who I am, I can control it. I can take it off, and I can put it on. It can get dirty, I can clean it. If I don't like it, I can put on a different garment. Right? That's the imagery of garments. Now let's go back to this. It's a very profound idea. So the Kabbalistic teachers tell us that the four layers of the soul, it's your soul, but it's your garments. You need to treat it like garments. In other words, it's not what defines you. You are not defined by your emotional personality. You are not defined by the ability that you have to think. You're not even defined by your subconscious, and you're certainly not defined by your behavior. So what are you defined by? By you. What's the you? What's the you in every single person? The you is that fifth core essence of purity and goodness. Okay? Because when you understand who you are from the very, very, very bottom, from the very, very depth of who you are, then you realize that everything else that comes after that, some of it is more closer to you than others. But your outer four layers are your garments. They're your garments. You need to deal with them. They belong to you. You need to take responsibility for them, and you need to clean them, and you need to preserve them, and you need to nurture them. But they're your garments. They're not you. And therefore, what that means is, because they're not you, they don't define you. You can change them. You can fix them. You can improve on them. And you can control them. So you can already see how, when you understand the essential purity in every single human being and you understand what defines you, it makes it more possible to grow. It makes it more possible to improve. Because suddenly, you can't say, well, that's me. No, it's not you. That's the point. You can't say, I'm not changing because it's impossible to change. You're right. You can't change you, but you can change your garments. To use the metaphor. You can change how you think. You can make a decision of how you're going to act. You can even make a decision of how you're going to emotionally respond, which is probably the hardest one to do. But you can. But it doesn't define you. So, once a person develops that perspective, a number of things are going to happen. Right? First of all, you accept yourself. You don't beat yourself up because you have a weakness. You don't beat yourself up because you made a mistake. Let's understand that those garments that God gave us are not us, but also every person has different garments. And every person's garments have different challenges. Right? And every garments have strengths and weaknesses. So once I understand that those garments are garments and not me, then the strengths that live on the various layers of my garments don't define me and therefore don't make me superior to you. I'm not better than you because my garments, because I have a talent in one of my garments that you don't have, because that talent is not me. It doesn't define me. What defines me is the same thing that defines you, and therefore I'm never superior to you and you're never superior to me. We have different garments. God entrusted us with different garments to take care of. And he gave you some strengths and me some strength, you some challenges, me some challenges, you some weakness, me some weakness. Right? So therefore, once we accept ourselves who we are, we accept that essentially we're always good, and essentially we have that level of purity that is always eternal and non-corruptible. That probably wasn't correct, but you know what I mean? Then we become much more secure with who we are, and we have humility, as we spoke about the first time. Because humility means, not that I don't have strengths. I do have strengths, and so do you. I have some strengths you don't have. You have some strengths I don't have. But that doesn't make either of us superior. It's those garments that God gave us. It's all God given, and it doesn't even define who we are. And conversely, what that means is that if I mess up, if I have a weakness, I'm not a bad person. Because my weaknesses don't define me either. And not only don't my weaknesses define me, but my mistakes don't define me either. There's a very big difference when you say you have to take responsibility for your mistakes than your mistakes defining you. So if I mess up, if I made a mistake today and I had a bad day and I responded with anger and I did the wrong thing and I behaved badly, it doesn't make me a bad person. I behaved badly. and I need to take responsibility for it. And I shouldn't just say, well, that's me. No, it's actually not you. Not you is good news and bad news. And, well, good news and good news, really. Good news means it's not you, and therefore you don't have to define yourself, for it doesn't turn you into a negative person. But not you also means that it's your garment. It's not you, but you have responsibility over it, and you have control over it. And therefore, it doesn't define you. You don't have to beat yourself up. You don't have to put yourself down, because it doesn't turn you into a negative person, but it does say to you that you have to take some responsibility for it. Let's just develop that a little bit further. Let's talk about strengths and let's talk about weaknesses. Everyone has strengths, right? That's part of self-esteem. Everyone has competencies. Everyone. And of course, it depends how you define the word competencies, right? It doesn't mean everyone's a scientist. It doesn't mean everyone's an opera singer. But it does mean that every person has a contribution to make, right? We talked about it the first time. Every person was created in the image of God. And therefore, and the human being was created to serve a purpose. And the purpose is to make this planet a better place and to bring holiness and purity and an improved level of life to this world. Everyone can contribute to that. Everyone has some way that they can make life more meaningful and purposeful. The problem is that very often part of the disease that we suffer from, a weak self-perception, is that we fail to recognize the strengths. Right? One of the strategies, by the way, of self-esteem is go home and take a journal and make two sides of the paper and do an honest assessment of yourself. An honest assessment of yourself means list 10 strengths and 10 weaknesses that you have. And there will be two kinds of people. One person will list 45 strengths and no weaknesses. And then you have the person who will list 75 weaknesses and no strengths. Why? Why are some people so resistant to recognize their own strengths? Why do some people put them down so much? You know, I don't have any strengths. I'm just a regular person. You know, I'm weak. Everyone's better than me, more talented than me, more capable than me, more able than me. I wish I could be like that one, like this one, like the other one. Right? You hear people saying, why? Part of the reason is because people are under the perception that their strengths define them. And therefore, if I recognize I have a strength, I'm in trouble. Why am I in trouble? Because if I recognize I have a strength, then it means I have to live up to them. Because if I don't live up to them, then there's something wrong with me. You see? If my strength defines me, and I recognize that I have it, if I'm a good person because I can sing nicely, then what happens if I get up there and I don't sing nicely? If I have a strength that I can build, or I can help people even if it's a good thing, if that's what defines me, then when I don't live up to it, then I'm undermining myself. And I'm scared of failing. Why am I scared of failing? Because people are very scared of failure, because the failure will define them. The failure will make them a failing person. So therefore they won't recognize they have strengths. But as soon as we realize that the strengths are not part of who we are. The strengths that we have, and God gave everyone different strengths, but the strengths that we have live in one of the layers. It might be an emotional strength, it might be a behavioral strength, it might be intellectual strength. Whatever the strength is, it doesn't live at the very core essence of who we are. It lives in one of the layers. It is close to us, it affects us, it's just connected with us, but it's our garment, it's not us. Then I don't mind recognizing it anymore. Because if I recognize it, I realize that even if I don't live up to it 100%, it doesn't define me as a failure. Even if I don't manage to do it completely, it doesn't make me a bad person. What it does mean is that I have those strengths, and therefore God gave me that mission of taking care of my garments. God said, I give you a set of four-layered garments, take care of them, nurture them. It doesn't define you, it won't turn you into a bad person if you don't take care of them, but it's your responsibility to take care of them. So therefore, you nurture this, you recognize the strengths, you're not scared of your own strengths. This is the point. You're not scared of your own strengths because you're not scared to fail, because if I, God forbid, fail, it's fine. Because I'm okay with myself. Myself is not my strength. Myself is who I am at the very core essence. Once you do that, we're much freer to recognize those many strengths and to work on them and to nurture them. And it's a critical part of building a healthy self-perception. So last week we talked about getting a mindset of not seeking approval from other people. The second strategy is to identify strengths that we have. But do it in the context of what we spoke about today. Do it in the context of not defining yourself by your strengths, and therefore making it easier for yourself to recognize that you do have strengths and you do have competencies, and to work on them and to nurture them. But then the next part of that equation is that we have to take responsibility for our weaknesses as well. And it goes, it's the same idea. You see, if you tell someone about a weakness, right, there's normally one of two reactions. Or people who do their own self-evaluation, there's normally one of two reactions to people's weaknesses. Now, every person has weaknesses. Because if we didn't, we wouldn't be created. We'd be created on the second day of creation. Because on the second day of creation, God created angels. That's people who don't have weaknesses. Right? He didn't create us on the second day. He created us on the sixth day. Because he put us, imperfect beings in an imperfect world, to travel through the journey of imperfection and work on it and bring transformation to what is imperfect. Okay. So we all have weaknesses. But this is the core. We need to understand and recognize those weaknesses and be okay with it. And accept our weaknesses, but at the same time improve on them. Why? See, people respond to weaknesses in two ways. Some people are in complete denial. Some people don't have weaknesses. Or so they think. If you don't believe me, try it out. Criticize one of those people and you'll see an explanation, a justification for every weakness that you point out. Push their buttons and see what happens. No, you shouldn't. You should do it nicely, but yeah. Okay. Some people acknowledge their weaknesses, but do it like infinitely. Like they have just every weakness under the sun. And in the course of acknowledging their weaknesses, put themselves down. And putting themselves down becomes an escape and becomes a mechanism not to do anything about it. You're right, I'm terrible, I'm sorry, you know. You know, I was waiting for you to pick me up at 10:15 and you came 25 minutes late and you messed up my whole day. You know, you're right, I'm just a terribly non-punctual person. I'm terribly sorry. So tomorrow you're going to come on time? No, because I'm a person that's not punctual. Right? What, are you silly? What, how can I come on time tomorrow if I'm not a punctual person? No, but seriously, people do that. People will scream and say, why do you scream? I'm a horrible person. I've heard that from people. I've heard people say that about themselves. What can you do? That's me. I'm a horrible person. Why do you talk to kids like that? I'm a terrible parent. Why do you have kids? Don't know, but I'm a horrible parent. I'm a horrible husband. I'm a horrible wife. People say those things. Right? In the name of self-acceptance. They accept who they are. That's why God made me. I'm full of weaknesses. I've probably got more weaknesses than most people. Tough luck. That's me. Right? So it's two responses. Either I've got no weaknesses, or I've got so many of them that that's me, and I'm not doing anything about it. Now, of course, as we explained, both come from the same problem. The problem is that people's perception is that they are defined by their weaknesses. They are defined by their garments. And therefore, if I mess up on one of the layers of my garments, that's me. So one of the two things have to happen. Either I've got to protect the me, the wrong me, but I've got to protect the me to such a degree that I reject and resist any form of criticism and any acknowledgement of any weakness, because I have no weaknesses, because if I do, that damages me, makes me a bad person, and makes me a negative person. So therefore, the easier thing is to go into complete denial and say, I don't have weaknesses, because then I'm okay. Then I've defined myself okay. It doesn't matter that the entire world thinks differently, but at least I know that I'm okay. In a negative way. Or, when I'm not able to do that anymore, where it's just, you know, my weaknesses have become so clear and so highlighted that it's just not possible to be in denial anymore. So then we switch to mode two. And mode two is, well, then you're right. I do have weaknesses, but I do have weaknesses and that's me. Sorry. So I'm a bad person. I'm a weak person. I'm a failure. And that's who I am. But if we take this approach, the whole thing changes. We take this approach is we can acknowledge weaknesses without a problem. Because I do have weaknesses, as do others. And it doesn't make me a bad person. I remain a good person intrinsically. I remain a person of value. I remain a person who's got intrinsic goodness. I haven't become a bad person because I made a mistake. Because I'm not defined by my mistakes. I'm not defined by my failures. But on the other hand, I'm okay to acknowledge them, but I also have to take responsibility for them. Because as I said before, once I acknowledge them and they're not me, then the me has control over them. And the me can change them. And the me can reconstruct them and reconnect and improve and grow from step to step. It's a very, very powerful approach. So therefore, going back to what we said in the beginning, a real healthy self-image isn't only about not defining ourselves by the approval of other people and the perception of other people. It's about not defining ourselves by our own outer layers, by our own strengths and weaknesses. And once we do that, then we can grow. Once we understand that the essential me is pure, then we can. It's easier to recognize our strengths, and we need to recognize our strengths. Then we can recognize and acknowledge our failures, and it's easier to do that. We can take responsibility for them. We don't have to be in denial, because they don't make us into negative people. It's a very easy thing to say, and it's an extremely difficult thing to live by. But it's those messages that we have to keep on playing within our minds. Because what happens as a result of that is, we then learn how to handle that very difficult word called criticism. Right? Most people don't like to be criticized. Is that fair? Or unless you're the opposite person who puts themselves down to such a degree that there's certain people that go looking for criticism. But most people don't like to be criticized. Right? And yet it's interesting. The Rambam tells us, Maimonides says that if a person really wants to grow, he has an amazing line, Ehoiv Esha Bikoiris, welcome criticism. So, you ever thought about that? Welcoming criticism, right? How do we welcome criticism? Now, criticism goes back and forth, and of course, there's a way to criticize people, and there's a way we should criticize people without undermining their dignity and compromising on their self-worth, etc., etc. But that's for the person that's doing the criticizing. And by the way, it's not a terrible thing to criticize. Sometimes we have to criticize. It's one of the principles in the Torah. We actually have to criticize people who are in our own circle of influence. And we all have people that we are leaders of. We all have, whether it's our own children, our very, very close friends. We all have people that are in our own circle of influence. And in the Chumash in the Torah, it says that one of the moral responsibilities that people have is to reprimand in a good way, in a positive way, but to point out someone else's failings so we can help other people grow. Why? Because people can't grow themselves, because most people are biased when it comes to themselves. Most people are subjective. It's very, very hard to be objective with yourself. To use the Talmudic expression, Adam Karova Etzel Atzmo, which means a person is related to themselves. In other words, you've got biases towards yourself. And therefore, we are all supposed to have someone that can point out, it can be objective. And therefore get taught in the ethics of the fathers that a person should have a personal mentor, a person should have like a spiritual coach, a person should have someone that can help them along. Children have parents, teachers, mentors, whatever the case is. Now of course the function and the role of a mentor is not to tell you how good you are all the time, right? It's supposed to point out things that are weaknesses, it's supposed to help you grow. And sometimes people step out of their responsibility and volunteer criticism, even though it's not their business, which is fine. And it's an amazing thing, but criticism is so sore, it is so painful, that most people either flare up, explode, or if they don't, if they control themselves, you can see them exploding inside, right? Or they become very defensive. Why are people so defensive? Why is it so hard to take criticism? And yet criticism actually is so critical. It's so vital for growth. And the answer is very simple in the light of our discussion today, because criticism, when someone criticizes me, and my whole self-perception, my whole identity is what other people think of me, or defined by my own weaknesses and strengths, by my own failings and successes. So as soon as you say, well, what you did yesterday was inappropriate, what I hear is you are a bad person. And no one wants to be told they're a bad person. Now that doesn't mean, by the way, that every time someone criticizes you, it's right or wrong. It could be right, it could be wrong. But what we have to learn to do is to manage, and it has a lot to do with the whole area of anger management. Because it has a lot to do with how we perceive ourselves and our initial reaction. And therefore, what we really need to do in terms of learning to handle criticism is this. If someone... Now this is going to be very easy to say and very difficult to put into practice. But this is the mindset that we have to work on. And even if we do it once, you know, that's also successful. Someone criticizes you. Someone tells you how inappropriate you were, something you did wrong, they're hurt by something. It tells you the way you spoke to another person wasn't right, the way you acted wasn't right, whatever the case is. Your assignment was sloppy, your job that you did was ineffective. whatever the case is, right? Reaction number one in our mind has to be, this is what we need to train ourselves to do. As soon as we hear someone criticize us, our initial thought process has to be, step one, whether this is true or not, it doesn't define who I am. Whether that person thinks so or not, doesn't define who I am. Whatever happens with this, I remain intrinsically a good person. I haven't changed. I accepted myself yesterday. I accept myself today. I am comfortable with myself. I am secure with myself. I accept myself. And that doesn't change, or is not defined by what you said. Number one, it's not defined by what you think. It doesn't define, and it's not defined by how I acted or behaved. In other words, whether it's true or not true, it's irrelevant. That's step number one. That's the thought process. There's a couple of steps that we have to have in mind when we receive criticism. Step one is, well, hold on a second. Whatever happens, even before I give this some thought, I'm not defined by it. I remain an intrinsically good person. Once I have that perspective, now let me hear what you said. And then you need to honestly, with the highest degree of possible honesty that you can have with yourself, you need to think, now let me think about what the person said. Now, when I think about what the person says, first of all, I have to separate two issues. You see, the problem is, and not everyone understands this concept, sometimes it's so difficult to receive criticism because I might know that I'm not defined by what you said, but the other person doesn't know that. And often criticism is delivered in the wrong language. Often criticism is delivered reinforcing the notion that I'm defined by what I did. Because what the person says to me is, you're a horrible person. You're a lazy person. You're a sloppy person. Putting me down, right? So when you hear the criticism, what I need to learn to do, therefore, is to divorce the packaging from the essential message. The packaging was, you did something wrong and therefore you're a wrong person. I have to hear, no, I'm not a wrong person. Now let me hear what I did. Let me just focus on what I did, not what I am. Not irrespective or notwithstanding of how you might have delivered that message. Right? Now, of course, when we give criticism, we need to remember that as well. When we give criticism, we need to ensure that we don't put a person down. We highlight the issue, not the person. But that's not always what people do, right? But as we receive criticism, we need to realize, hold on a second, that's untrue. The part that's definitely untrue is that something wrong with me. Nothing wrong with me. I remain an intrinsically good person. Once I understand that, once I've appreciated, once I take that on board, now let me be comfortable now with engaging with the particular criticism of my behavior or my response or my emotional response. And let me think about it and do a simple, quick analysis. It's either true or it's not true. But you see, once I'm not defining myself by it, once I'm comfortable to hear it, once I'm not going to put myself down as a bad person if it's possibly true, then I can be much more honest about it. Because once I accept myself as being an intrinsically good person, now let me just think about what you said, because whether it's true or not true, it's not going to change who I am. It's going to change what I need to do, but it's not going to change who I am. So now I'm much more comfortable, and I can now honestly take it apart. So I take it apart. If I really believe that it's not true, so I forget about it. And I don't walk around for the next 17 weeks bothered because you thought that I made a mistake. Because I don't define myself by what you thought. So therefore, I'm fine. I'm finished now. As we mentioned millions of times, I will not let the person live in my head rent-free. So I kick him out. I evict him and that's it. Right? Because it's not, it doesn't define me. Right? If it is true, on the other hand, it could be true. If it is true, that's fine because I have weaknesses. I'm okay to hear criticism. So I listen to it and let me think what I can do about it. So whether it's true or not, I'm fine anyway. But if it's not true, so I forget about it, irrespective of what you think. If it is true, I thank you. Thank you for pointing it out. Didn't quite like how you said it, but nevertheless, thank you. So if we really believe this, if we really took this on board, I'm not saying I do this, but if we really took this on board, we'd actually thank people for criticism. Again, not necessarily thank them for the style, but thank them for pointing this out because now I know what to work on. So therefore, I will take it away because it's one of my garments and God gave me garments to nurture and take responsibility. And if one of my garments is dirty, I need to take it to the cleaners. Very simple. So therefore, I've got to work on it and I've got to improve upon it. If we put it in that frame of mind, the whole tension, the whole You know, as Rabbi Twersky gives the analogy in one of those books I mentioned before, he says that giving a person criticism is like touching a person's skin. It depends, you know, if they're not sunburnt, then it's not painful. If they're very, very sunburnt, then the slightest touch, right? A person with a very, very fragile skin is like has a very, very strong sunburn, and therefore the slightest touch will send them flying. But if we have a healthy sense of self, then we don't have a sunburn, then someone, you know, strokes us a little bit, it's fine. So it all comes back to this, putting last week and this week together. It comes back of the direction of how we establish our identity. The way a person is, we start off with the core essence of who we are. We have our garments around us, and then we have the world outside of us. So many people so many of us who are working on a fragile, insecure self-perception, begin our whole identity from the outside world and work in. It's an outside-in approach. What's at the very core of building a healthy self-perception and understanding our intrinsic worth is to reverse that whole process completely. Not only to start with us going out to the outside world, but within ourselves, to start inside out, not outside in. To start with the very core of who we are, and then to move on to the layers of our human existence, and from then to move on to people around us. When we flip that and we develop that mindset, our whole perception of the world, our whole perception of everything that we do, becomes a lot healthier. And not that it compromises our growth, but on the contrary, it causes us in a much, much greater way to develop our strengths, and it helps us in a much, much greater way to take responsibility for the weaknesses and to grow and to take the next step. Next week, by the way, just to point out, I'm leaving early this term, as you know, so we have another 2 weeks. In 2 weeks' time, will be the last one of this term and this year. But the next 2 weeks, we'll deal with some of the other strategies that we need to take on board to develop this mindset and to improve our self-perception. Have a great week.